Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I am your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
Nice.
Yeah. My cat is curled up on my lap purring like crazy, so that's nice.
Are you able to record with such a wonderful distraction?
I think I can do it.
Yeah. Okay. I believe in you.
Anything new and exciting going on in your life?
My local game store is running a Crisis Protocol League, and we've got 22 people signed up.
Nice.
So it's pretty good.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. They put us all in the guy running it put the people in like tiered leagues. So he put one with all the best players, middle of the road, and like worst players, and then he made one that was all the new people. And he's kind of doing brackets, trying to make it, you know, trying to do it like that. And I was like, oh, cool. He put me in the Inhumans. And I was like, that's not the best group, is it? And he was like, nope. So I'm in the middle of the road players group. which is funny, but it's also probably related to the fact that I always bring dumb shit to goof around with.
Sure. Or there's always, like... a lot of times when you're podcasting a lot, you end up bringing stuff that isn't optimized.
Yeah.
Because you're, you know, trying stuff out for the podcast.
Yeah, I'm thinking he went off of our old, so in our old league, I got 5 wins and 2 losses, but I had the average amount of points, like, was where I ended up, because it was more casual. So it's also partly that, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
Next week should be, well, so Monday should be the day that I have, like, my full vaccination superpowers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so Wednesday will be the first game night that I go to at Gameopolis, so.
Oh, that must be so nice.
Excited for that, yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. I'm very excited for you.
There's been, I guess, a few, teasers or full card reveals, any that you were especially excited about?
Oh, I'm really excited for Mr. Sinister. They showed his full cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked how he looks. He seems to be just a very unique four-pointer. Like, he's got defensive stuff, he's got, I mean, a range 4 Mystic Beam that's 5 dice is good on its own. And he's got lots of other stuff, and his whole model is kind of like, use that beam as often as you can. And I'm like, oh no, I have to use his beam.
Anything but that. Yeah. What did you think of the... I've been so busy that in general I haven't had a chance to read, like, the panel to play and, like, try to piece out what they're saying in them, but... Didn't they do one for Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch?
Yes. Quicksilver basically is like he can move twice long. He has a superpower that gives him another move. I think both of his attacks generate movement as well. So he moves a ton. And from what we know, he's going to be a 3-pointer. So I'm guessing moving long and like, he'll be wherever you need him to be is kind of his shtick, but that's fine, right? Like, I love that. And, you know, it's any character that can generate extra moves is almost automatically good, in my opinion, for like that that point value, and also because this is a game where you have to be scoring and contesting scenarios. Scarlet Witch was the one, like, she's going to be ridiculous. Did you read it?
Kind of seems like she should be, right?
So I have long had this thing with Scarlet Witch where I think in most of her history in the comics, she was very mediocre. And so I was kind of wondering, are they going more the recent, like, amazingly overpowered version, or are they going to go with, you know, her No More Mutants, WandaVision version? And they're definitely going the strong version. She has long range, high strength mystic attacks. Failures count as successes for her, and her main attack of, like, chaos magic gives a special effect for each failure that she rolls, and it's just that alone increases her, like, it's called the Chosen of Cthon rule that lets her count failures, like, that increases everything she's going to do by 12%. I think she's just going to be incredible. Like, we're going to get a MODOK level attacker is my feeling, because we know she's a 5, so.
Right.
I'm excited. I think she's going to be incredible. We don't have the full card for her, and, you know, like, that could change things, but I'm very excited for her. And if she's an Avenger as well as a Brotherhood member, I'm hoping that Avengers are going to get a big push, like, in the upcoming future, because we're getting two new cool models, we're getting new Captain America, so I'm excited for Avengers to be not seen as the worst affiliation by a lot of people.
Yeah, so one other thing we saw was the sculpt for Falcon Captain America. What did you...
He's incredible. He's amazing.
Think of that.
Jay, he's incredible. He's like doing his sweeping forward. It looks like he's banking. So he has his wing, like, going down, like he's turning. And there's an explosion on his base to bring him off the ground. It's super dynamic. It's really cool. I'm a huge fan of it.
Nice. Okay, well, are we ready to talk about this comic that really shows off Toad a lot?
I never said it showed off Toad.
Oh, okay. Well, it is sweet.
I said Toad stories are all bad. This is a really good story, and Toad is in it, so we should take this excuse to read this.
Okay, well, that's fair.
So this is written by Neil Gaiman, one of my favorite authors. What?
I'll ask now. So I know that Neil Gaiman is a beloved author.
Okay.
And I think the only thing I've read of his is Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Okay, the short story book from a couple years, from, oh god, like 10 years ago, right?
It was kind of like a fairy tale. But it was fine. It didn't really, it didn't seem noteworthy to me per se.
Okay.
I guess I ought to read American Gods. It seems like that is what a lot of people love the most of his. But I'm curious what do you love about him, and what are the things, the works that he does that you've loved the most?
So Neil Gaiman as a writer is very, I would say if he had like a trope, which he totally does, it's that he integrates in like almost a fairy tale quality to a lot of his stories. There's often, he often plays with mythology, or like an outside of the box belief is very common. So my introduction to Neil Gaiman, like many comic book fans, was through Sandman. Sandman is currently published as, I think it's nine volumes. But it is it kind of revolutionized comics, much in the way like Watchmen introduced the idea of like more realistic, gritty stories to comics. Sandman brought about the idea. Sandman popularized comics that aren't about superheroes. So in Sandman, the mythology is that there are these beings called the Endless, and they are the representations of like humanity's abstracts. And so there's dream, desire, delirium, destruction, death. There's two more. I don't remember all of them off the top of my head, but I said the important ones to the stories. But basically, the Sandman comic is about dream, and it starts with someone tries to summon death to gain immortality, and they accidentally summon dream. They realize they fucked up, and they can't release dream, and they can't coerce or control him. So they leave him in a summoning circle for like 100 years. And it kind of sets up that like society changes and becomes more gritty and realistic and less hopeful because dream is absent from mankind's lives. And so the beginning of the story is like he breaks free eventually and has to recover his power and restore his kingdom. And it's just this really cool epic like mythology story that's original and no one had done, you know, anything like it before. And it's got this beautiful dreamlike covers and art. It's just, it's an amazing story. His books, I love less than his comics sometimes. Mm. But he wrote a book of Norse mythology, that he basically just retold a bunch of the most popular Norse stories. He's written some really good, like young adult and children's books. I really love the Graveyard book, which is about a boy raised by ghosts. There's one I really, he wrote, Coraline. He wrote the book that inspired the movie. I do like American Gods and Anansi Boys. But something I really do like is I like his short stories a lot as well. Some of them are really cool. There's a board game based on one of his short stories. What is it called? It's like the Emerald Letter or something. But he wrote a short story. Oh, A Study in Emerald. So he wrote a short story called A Study in Emerald that was a riff off A Study in Scarlet, the Sherlock Holmes story. And it's basically, what if Sherlock Holmes happened in Cthulhu land where like the elder gods had controlled everything? And yeah, they made a board game.
I thought A Study in Emerald was actually Cthulhu written by Lovecraft, but it was written by
Neil Gaiman.
Gaiman,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, and so it's like he's one of those authors that I think is so influential that you don't notice, you don't know when he was influential, and sometimes you don't realize. But I really like him. I've actually met him a couple times at book signings, and he came to the comic shop I worked at, and he's a super friendly guy, which like it's not relevant really, but I like it.
And it's nice when creative people or people that you admire are just seem to be good people or nice people.
Yeah, he doesn't suck. That helps. But no, so this was Neil Gaiman getting to create his own Marvel universe, basically. He got to do what he wants. I don't think Marvel had any influence over this, and I don't think they asked him to make this. I think they allowed him to do it. But so we see the world of 1602 is Earth in 1602, except something's wrong in that classic Marvel heroes and villains are kind of, they're in this world even though they shouldn't be. And so we've got some main characters are shown as like Nick Fury is the Queen Elizabeth's like head spy. We see that there is a character called Rajas who is a Native American defending a little girl who's the first girl born in the colonies. We see a version of Peter Parker who works for Nick Fury. We see Matthew Murdock, who is a bard who is also secretly a spy. Instead of mutants, they are witch breed. There's the Grand Inquisitor, who is Magneto, and his Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are like his head accomplices. It's a really interesting like take where you're like, oh, they're just repurposing them.
Yeah, initially when I was reading it, everywhere. Yeah, there are Yeah, and he's like, at one point, he breaks the fourth wall, and the illustrator is like, hey, what's up with these dinosaurs? And he's like, don't worry, it's going to make sense. And then it never does.
It's never really, explained fully. But, so, there is another part where the Watcher is narrating the comic to let you know that, these people, it's not just an alternate universe or, a bumped timeline. These people are supposed to exist over 300 years later, but for some reason they're coming into existence now, and it's because there's some sort of time storm. And so there's red lightning storms, blood red skies, there's no rain, it's just a lightning storm without rain. There's rains of lizards that turn into red plasma, earthquakes, floods, so there's something horribly wrong with the world, and people are talking about it like it's the apocalypse. And so the story is split among all these different characters, kind of trying to figure out their point of view, their angle. So there's one where there's an old man who's got a Templar secret, and he's bringing it to England to save the day. And then there's, Nick Fury and Peter Parker trying to protect the Queen while at the same time figure out, why is there this storm? Doctor Strange is the Queen's physician, and he's using magic and translocating himself. It shows the base. So it's the original X-Men they save Angel from being burned at the stake, and then they run to Professor X, Javier's academy. It's just the world is really interesting, seeing all these little tweaks to the characters. And so all these kind of plot lines converge in England. And we see that Dr. Doom assassinates the Queen so that King James is going to come to the throne. James is going to put in threat the mutants and Doctor Strange while they're trying to investigate things. Nick Fury sends Matthew Murdock to go help the Templar get to England and protect him. I'm missing one, aren't I? One of them is the X-Men saving Angel. But so as the story goes on, we learn that the problem is that 15 years ago, something was shunted through time to their location, and it has basically broken time so much that it's going to lead to the end of their world. And later the Watcher explains that it's so bad that when their world ends, it will actually end all worlds, because it will shatter across the timeline, and it will destroy all the universes. So the Watchers are like, well, we'll
It was also kind of funny. They're like, oh, I mean, that'll be fine, because it'll take 200 million years to destroy the universe. And they're like, oh no, it's just going to instantaneously
destroy everything. And I loved how, if there's nothing for us to watch, that will be unfortunate. Which is really fun, just showing how shitty the Watchers are sometimes about, their whole deal of not interceding. Which they totally do in this comic.
Yeah, every time they're like, oh, sorry, we can't intercede. But by the way, here, let me intercede a little bit.
By the way, me telling you this thing. Yeah, so they make Doctor Strange... Uatu the Watcher makes Doctor Strange promise not to give up his secrets as long as he lives. And so then he's executed by James for witchcraft, so that his spirit attached to his head can share the information about what's going on with everybody, which is very goofy and silly. We have subplots about Doctor Doom trying to capturing the Templar weapon, and he's experimenting on it, and it turns out Dr. Doom has the Fantastic Four imprisoned in his basement, basically, and that he's getting Reed Richards to give him information and help him figure things out. And so Dr. Doom has this big gold egg that he thinks is the Templar thing, and it's weird and it doesn't work right. And it's really cool. I like it's some weird future item, but it turns out that was actually a red herring, because the real artifact is back in the wagon. And so Matt Murdock and the old man Templar are freed because the thing has been slamming left and right in his cell, and he has made cracks in the foundation, and it has a couple cool side effects, where one of them is it shatters a invisible glass barrier in Doom's bedroom, and the other thing is it frees like a bunch of the prisoners, and so they escape, and it turns out that the artifact is a stick that is Thor's hammer. And so the old man hits it on the ground and transforms into 1602 Thor, who looks really like cool. I really like 1602 Thor a lot. And then we get all the characters basically are going to the new world in different ways. So Thor leaves Matthew Murdock? Yeah, Thor leaves Matthew Murdock, and Thor takes like the Fantastic Four, and he takes Nick Fury, and they all go back to meet up with everybody else who's trying to save the world from being destroyed, because they know that a person was sent through the past, and that's what is causing these ripple effects. So the reason Nick Fury's here instead of in 1940s is because of this like time dilation effect, or this accident that happened. And so it's Clea, Dr. Strange's wife, realizes that they keep kind of talking about how the little girl Virginia is the person, but in reality they realize that it is Rojas. And so Rojas reveals himself to be the Steve Rogers of the far future. So in his timeline,
real quick, so I did look at like a wiki on this one a little bit when I was reading it to see. There were some characters where I was like, okay, is this person someone who's related to someone in the other character, or is it just its own character, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at some things on that. But one of the things that wiki said was that Rojas's name is supposed to be pronounced Rogers.
Yeah, it's Rogers. Rogers.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
It's like, but okay.
Did you read that? Did you get that when you were reading it? Because I didn't.
I didn't. No, I absolutely would have been Rojas the entire time. Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading Rojas until I told you before we started recording that I forgot so much of this comic. And I was like, oh yeah, he's Steve Rogers. Got it. So yeah, Rojas is Steve Rogers from a far future. And so in his future, things are pretty much the same, except heroes were hunted down and killed, and it's like shows Spider-Man and Daredevil in jail. And it looks like the Purple Man became president for life, and Captain America stood up and fought against him. And eventually they caught him, and then they weren't okay with just killing him. They shot him in the head, and then they blasted him with some device that sent him to this universe and this time, which I think is crazy and silly, but I love it. So it's a Steve Rogers from a different timeline, a future timeline, and the device sent him back and punched it. And so basically the big revelation is they need to send Steve Rogers back to his timeline to fix everything. And so, you know, they're all coming to the new world. They're all basically like they're all coming together, right? The X-Men force Magneto to help them and join their side. They convince the drunk old man to become Thor again because they need his lightning. They needed to like, oh, Nick Fury hits Captain America over the head with a rock because he doesn't want to go back to his old reality. And so they basically like Magneto controls the time portal and Thor's energy powers it. And all the science, you know, Reed Richards is figuring it out and everything. And they send Steve Rogers back. And I really love these pages where it's turning black and white. And then the time dilation is like a rainbow and it's colorful. I thought that was really cool. And so it shows like that their timeline ends, right? They sent Captain America back and they fixed everything. And so they're like, it's over and it's black. And they talk about how time reconfigures itself. And it shows that Virginia is like killed as an animal. It shows that, you know, everything happens as normally. And then the like king of the Watchers, I've never seen this character before. He's like a bigger Watcher with a bigger forehead. Like his brain is bulging out of his face. Mm-hmm. But this other Watcher comes and he's like, you know, we'll feel shame for meddling and being selfish. But we decided, you know, so that you don't forget, we're giving you the High Tribunal, we're giving you something. And they give him this little gem. And then the Watcher looks at it and the gem is this reality that was just erased. So instead of letting the reality get erased, they like turned it into its new reality and they gave it to Uatu. The implication here is that Uatu the Watcher is still in the main Marvel comic universe, and 300 years later, he has a gem that is this reality, I guess, which is interesting. But, you know, so it goes back to the story, and they're kind of like, oh, nothing changed, but how would we know if the universe ended or not if they just restarted it, like gods or whatever? And so the comic kind of continues with everybody going their separate ways. We see Ye Olde Hulk. We see Peter Parker get bit by a spider at the very end. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, that's the end of this story. So that's the last that Neil Gaiman did 1602 comics. But there actually have been several other ones that people have done. There's like an Angela 1602. They brought it back in Secret Wars because it was about like realities crashing into each other. They did a New World comic. They did a Fantastic Four comic. They did a Spider-Man comic. So there's other comics in this universe, but they're not written by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, I think I read some other ones. I don't think it was this one that I read. But they were, I don't remember which one I read, honestly, at this point, but I do remember enjoying it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a unique enough, like, interesting universe. Like, there's not many comic books set during this time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of room for, like, cool stories that we haven't really seen before. There's a lot of, like, play off of the Inquisition, and every single character is devoutly religious here. And they bring up stuff about how, you know, like Nick Fury almost doesn't help the good guys because he views the king as an extension of God. And so like betraying the king is betraying God. There's a lot of just really interesting points that this comic covers.
Another thing that was interesting from that I also would never have known without looking at the wiki. But it talks some about kind of historical things that are in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the examples it gave was that you know, King James was an actual person, right? Mm-hmm. And his kind of crusade against crusade is probably the wrong word, but close enough, I guess, against the, I guess, mutants in this, mm-hmm. was kind of a riff off of what he did with Catholics in our actual history.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was interesting that there were things like that that were in the story as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, I feel like they did their due diligence. Well, Neil Gaiman did his due diligence to kind of make this as accurate as he could. Like even the outfits are supposedly very accurate to the time, the Elizabethan era.
Yeah.
If you want to get specific.
So I'm kind of curious on your take on, there's only one thing that I wasn't totally sure how I felt about. Okay. And I'm curious what you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So what? I first of all, I guess how long ago was this written?
2003.
So, like, I'm not sure what I think about Steve Rogers being an Indian.
They do kind of talk about it.
Okay.
They mention that he looks really, he doesn't look like how they expect. And it's like, well, that's proof that there's Welsh ancestors.
Right. Yes.
I mean, it colonizers love to rape, Jay. I think that it's weird, but I didn't like it as much until they reveal that he's like, he's not an Indian. He's a time traveling white guy who the Indians kind of adopted.
Yeah. There were parts of it where, so I mean, like, not to get super political on this or whatever. But like there are times where people are like, oh, that's appropriation or whatever. And it just like, there were times when I would be reading the comic and it just like looked weird to see a white guy that
dressed up like an Indian.
Dressed up like an Indian, right?
Yeah, but I think it's not appropriation because they're not, this isn't a white person like appropriating it. It's a white person who the plot is that he's kind of hiding as like a white looking Indian.
I had a friend send me this tweet, and I think the person who posted this tweet was like completely earnest, but my friend sent it to me like kind of making fun of the person. Mm-hmm. So the tweet says, if you're white and you eat sushi with chopsticks, congratulations, you're a colonizer.
Oh, fuck. Man, see, that's the kind of stuff that worries me sometimes.
Right? Yeah, right. But on the other hand, like, so obviously I'm a pretty big Disney fan, and they're currently going through stuff like, you know, they're redoing Splash Mountain because Song of the South.
Song of the South is the most racist thing they've ever done.
Right. And they're redoing the Jungle Cruise because it has a bunch of jokes that are racist in it, essentially. So
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm curious if, like, you know, 40 years after this is written, if people are going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe.
I hope not.
How racist this comic is.
I think the plot kind of gives him an excuse. And they, it's not like they ignore it and they're just like, yes, Indians look like this. I think it's fine. It's not like he's in blackface or anything trying to like pretend to be an Indian. I don't know. If you think it's offensive, please let me know. Cause I legitimately want to know this because I don't think it is, but I'm also, you know, I'm who I am, and my point of view is a pretty narrow one sometimes, so.
Yeah, I mean, I would, you know, be most interested in hearing from someone who, like, is Native American, what their opinions or views on it, but, you know, two.
Oh, hey, speaking of, if you want to watch a pretty cool TV show about Native American and, the whole Native American like intersectionality with like American ideals, there's a new show that's pretty solid called Rutherford Falls on Peacock, and I started watching it, and it's actually pretty good. But it's about like a tribal, it's a bunch of tribal characters who are basically like using their laws and their like ancient, their old agreements to like kind of get the better of this town. And it's got Ed Helms as the main white guy, and it has the sexy veterinarian from Schitt's Creek. Ted's in it, and he's got a really hot beard, and the female character is like just like going goo goo gaga on him, and it's really funny. It's really good. It's a really well done show. I really enjoyed it. But one of my favorite moments is there's like, they have a big lawyer meeting at one point, and one of the guys keeps saying Indian. And he's like, I don't understand, though. It's called the Indian Organization. He just said Indian. And then he's like talking about it. And then one of the characters is like, who's keeping notes? How many times did this white guy just say that word he said? And they're like, five times. He said it five times. Okay, we're going to use that. And
Brian and I are currently rewatching Schitt's Creek.
Oh, good.
And I looked up Ted on IMDb and saw a picture of him with a beard. And I was like, oh no, what have you done to yourself?
Dude, it's great. It's a good beard. Whatever, Jay, you're wrong. Anyways, this comic is good, and I don't think it's racist.
Okay, well, let's talk about the art.
I'm honestly worried about what you're going to say about this art, Jay.
Let's just pump the brakes here. My taste in comic book art is impeccable. And any insinuation otherwise, I mean, if anything, you're the one who has, like, just trash taste that can enjoy anything.
All right. Okay.
Anyways.
All right. Okay.
I love the art in this.
Uh-huh. Good. I'm glad you love it.
And it's actually good, unlike a lot of the Drek you like.
So we've had a couple of these artists before. This is drawn by Adam or Andy Kubert. I cannot remember. Hold on, I'm gonna double check. I think it's Andy Kubert, who is the son of Joe Kubert. Joe Kubert has been doing comics like since the 50s. He is 40s. Oh my God, he is one of America's like classic comic book artists, and so this is his son who did this. And I had to Google it because I was like, this art is so good. So apparently they used a weird technique where they didn't ink this comic. So normally a comic is pencil, then an inker goes over it and defines things better and gives texture sometimes, and then it goes to be colored. This one went straight from pencils to the colorist. And that's why sometimes I think the colors are more dominant than the lines. And it works really well with the colors here. I think there's a lot of just really beautiful pages. It gives it a very distinct look that it doesn't have like sharp black lines a lot of the times. And I think it's part of why this comic is so beautiful. But I love
that
this
makes stuff. Sense.
It's so distinct.
I think it's great.
It's so beautiful.
Yes.
This is probably one of my favorite. It's like a compromise between hyperrealism and the classic Marvel comic book style.
Yeah.
And I think it's just absolutely incredible. It's one of my favorite art styles in Marvel.
Yeah, I will agree. It gets high marks for me.
Okay.
Because I have impeccable taste.
Sigh.
You know it's true.
I just think that you need to be more accepting of older art styles.
I encounter point. Do I? Although I mean, I am. It's fine. I can also accept that this is like a character flaw of my own that goes through several aspects of my life. For example, Trevor loves old shitty action movies, and I can enjoy like new shitty action movies where like the special effects and the video quality are decent, but the old ones where it's like, so not only does this have a bad story, the special effects are really bad. Like I just can't do it. And so that is analogous to a poorly drawn comic from the 80s.
Fine. I went and looked at some Joe Kubert art, his father's art, and honestly, his dad has always been on point. Like, nice. His dad's ridiculously good. So anyways, that's pretty cool. Joe Kubert is like one of those artists who like his art, his originals are sold in like art museums and auctions and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're just handled very, very like, wow, this is an amazing original piece of art.
Yeah.
So cool.
So it seemed like at the start the main characters were kind of I would say Nick Fury and Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then it gave a little bit more attention to like Professor X and Magneto, and then at the end it had a lot of Mr. Fantastic. And we haven't had many comics with Reed Richards in it, but I thought that it was one of the more enjoyable representations of him that I've read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because it's like it's an alternate version of him. But yeah.
Yeah. Well,
he's less like cocky and more like, oh, a science thing. I'm going to ignore everything else and like go do science things. I think that's a better version of his character. I also like he'll do stuff in this comic, like he'll stretch his neck out for no reason, or he'll like wrap his arm around something like six times for no reason. He uses his powers a lot more in this just to be like, look at me, I'm stretchy. There's a scene where he's like talking to a group of people and his like neck is stretched out like a giraffe over them. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely very like stretchy man. So was there anything in this that didn't work for you?
No, this is just such an amazing standalone story. I really enjoyed it. It manages to be an alternate reality story while also fitting into the main Marvel universe, which I think is really special and cool. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I've already like the only one that potentially gives me a little bit of a twinge is Steve Rogers, but the rest of it. And even that, like I'm not even sure I have an issue with it. So
you know, yeah,
whatever, I guess.
Yeah. So three thumbs up.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Three thumbs up, everybody. Buy it now. Invest.
Anything else you want to go over on this one?
I think if you really enjoy this, you might want to go check out some of the sequels that build on the world. I did flip through to a couple of them, and like I said earlier, they're not by Gaiman, but they're still good. They're still very enjoyable. I think you want to start with New World and Fantastic Four, and then you can read Spider-Man.
Okay. Well, Greg and I will announce the next comic and character on social media and in the bonus episode, but smash the subscribe button on Patreon and you can listen to us talk about Toad in Game, and you can listen to us talk about the finale of Falcon and Winter Soldier. That'll be exciting.
Hell yeah.